south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's hit a few emails first. Here's one stuck in the spam box for a month or so. Yep, stuck in the spam box used to be the big excuse if you didn't get back to someone, right? And remember when cell coverage was bad and your signal would go in and out, and thus you were able to use that excuse if you wanted to cut off a conversation, oops, or not answer someone? Hey, I can't hear you, you're dropping out. Well, you can't use those excuses anymore because technology is pretty solid. Even here in Latin America, cell phones rarely drop out unless you're way, way out in the boonies. That said, let me use this lame excuse once again. Got stuck in the spam box. It really did. This comes from Mr. Enver. Won't tell you his last name, but it's a Spanish one. He says, hey, Johnny, my name's Enver. I'm looking into visiting Bolivia and exploring the idea of moving there with my family. How do you see the process of acquiring visa or permanent residency there? Thanks, man. Signed, Enver. Well, there's a name I never heard before, but obviously it's Spanish. Speaking of unusual names, you'd think that people of color up in the States, especially in the hood, would have the concession on oddball, eccentric, or just plain different names. Well, if you study the situation, they've got nothing on Latin Americans, especially when it comes to nicknames. Now, you know, here in Latin America, one of the most common terms of endearment is to call someone fatty. That's gordo for men and gorda for women. Fatty, you know, double lard. And of course, no skinny person is ever tagged with a name like that. It's always some chubby kid who grows up to be quite fat. And you know, that in itself says a lot about Latin America. Just the all-round tolerance people have for things. Someone you call fatty down here is not an insult. It's not any kind of slap in the face or demeaning put down. But if you tried that up in the States, well, the fat shamers would be all over your ass. You'd get canceled and you'd probably end up having to go to some kind of sensitivity counseling. Man, am I glad I'm living here in Latin America. All right, so you think I'm digressing, right? Well, in the famous words of John Paul Jones, not the Zeppelin guy, I have not yet begun to digress. Or something like that. Anyway, just the other day I was in an Uber. And you know how those Uber guys have their phone mounted on a suction cup device to the windshield? Well, I take that back. They probably don't do that up in the States because it's illegal to put anything on your windshield. And they'll fine you $200. But down here, when it comes to windshields, anything goes. You can put all kinds of stencils, stick-ons, religious symbols. And man, are Latinos big on religious symbols. You know, every chicken bus has a life-sized religious something or other stenciled on it. Buses are even named after saints. For all the extra points, that might infer. Chicken buses still crash and burn with monotonous regularity. So maybe immediately after the crash, the driver gets those extra points at the pearly gates. Now, where were we? Oh, yeah, talking about stuff stuck to the windshield. And, of course, those little suction cup things that hold your telephone. And almost all Uber drivers use them. You know, so they can throw up Google Maps, which I never use. Anyway, I get into this Uber, and his phone rings. And you know how when your phone rings, if he or she's in your contacts, the name of the person pops up in big letters on your screen. Well, in this particular case, the guy's name was Poco Feo. Poco Feo. Actually, two words, Poco Feo, which translates in English to a little ugly or slightly ugly. And when the Uber driver hung up, I said, is that his real name? A little ugly, Poco Feo? He said, yeah, and gave me a look like, so what? Now, imagine if you lived in Seattle, Cleveland, or Jersey, and you ran into a guy named Slightly Ugly. Well, first off, you know that would never happen. Because for one thing, that guy would probably have a really tough life. Probably spending half his time explaining his name to people. And the other half fighting off bullies. Oh, and of course I asked the Uber driver if he really was a little ugly. Poco Feo, you know. Then he tapped the phone a few times and brought up the guy's mug. And sure enough, it was a more than slightly ugly guy. In the conventional sense, anyway. And in the photo, he was snuggling up to a beautiful Latina and two little kids. And I said to the Uber driver, yeah, well, he's ugly, all right. But he must have something going for him. He's got a beautiful wife. Way out of his league. And the Uber driver just laughed and he said, yeah, he does have something. It's called money. Yep, that's right. It's the universal law of attraction. Guys are attracted to youth and beauty. Women to guys who are good providers. Though the uglier the guy, the better a provider he necessarily has to be. So guys, remember that when you're shooting for girls out of your league. But also, don't ever forget that down here in Latin America, both gringos and gringas can add 2 extra points to their score. So when you get down here, if you happen to be in the mating and dating game, you'll have to reconsider your standards as to who is actually in or out of your league. So is that un-PC enough to start off the show today? So anyway, our buddy Enver is asking about Bolivia. You know, I don't talk about Bolivia much because I don't much recommend it for gringos and expats. Not that it isn't a cool place to live, work, play, and or visit. It's just that it's so laid back and so behind that every gringo and expat I know that lives there is pretty much a dedicated environmentalist tree hugger type who don't mind living in a sleepy little country where 50% of the population is so poor they still have dirt floors. Nothing wrong with that, I suppose. People are really happy, as they are in most all Latin countries. But if you, for example, select a city like Guatemala City or Tegucigalpa, Honduras, San Jose, Costa Rica, Panama City, Panama, you can get practically everything. It's really easy to live like a first world gringo. You'll practically never have to send to the U.S. for anything, unless, of course, you want some specialty items and you get them on Amazon. But Bolivia, man, it's stuck way back in time. And for me and most all average expats, it's just way too boring. Not much happening at all. But some people absolutely love that. In fact, they need it. You know, ones who've got health problems and want to slow down, lower their stress and their blood pressure. And if you're a hiker, a climber, love outdoor sports, and you love the great outdoors, Bolivia is the place to be. Of course, most other Latin American countries fit that description too. But Bolivia, well, it's a nature lover's paradise. Unless, of course, you live in one of the big cities, which can be pretty scruffy. And except for the fact that it's landlocked means it's got no really nice beaches at all. It's a place gringos and expats can really get off the radar, really get lost. In fact, there aren't very few gringos and expats living there at all, which means you almost necessarily have to speak Spanish, eventually anyway. In fact, it's the one place I've been to where even most of the doctors and lawyers don't speak English yet. Now, you've heard me say that most professionals throughout Latin America who are under 50 years old speak some English. It's pretty much a requirement in all professional careers these days because almost all the latest, greatest, cutting-edge stuff is coming out of the States and Europe in English. So, for example, if you're a medical doctor, you want to know the new treatments and the breakthroughs that are on the horizon. You don't want to wait 6 months or a year until the journals, videos, and blogs translate everything into Spanish, which they eventually will. But there's something like a 6 months to a year translation lag time. Not good if you're looking for a cutting-edge treatment. And that's why almost all professionals learn English, or at least enough to get by. Though somehow in Bolivia, even most professionals haven't upped their game in the English-speaking department yet. So if you're going there to live, you better bone up on Spanish. And the other thing is, if you want first-world medical care, you're only going to find that in the big cities. As soon as you get 10 miles out of a big city, it's like going through a time machine. Suddenly, you're 50 years in the past. So the truth is, finding first-world-style healthcare in Bolivia can be a problem. Sure, they've got the national healthcare system like all Latin countries do. But you know how that goes. Governments can't do anything right. And though they'll pump money in right before election time, after the votes are counted, it's back to severe neglect again. In fact, people living out in the boonies and people in really small communities often die seeking medical help on that long chicken bus ride or back of the pickup truck ride to the big city seeking more modern, up-to-date medical care. Yeah, they've got some big cities, all right, with a million or more people, like Santa Cruz, La Paz, Cochabamba, and Sucre. By the way, you know, ex-president Evo Morales, who was indicted on something like 12 counts of corruption, he fled the country, you know, before they could prosecute him. You know he's a dyed-in-the-wool socialist, best friends with Castro and Hugo Chavez when they were alive, and he's good friends with Maduro, Venezuela's dictator. But, you know, the indigenous population of Bolivia just loved the guy, because for one thing, before he took office, less than half of the population were vaccinated. And by the time he left office, everyone was vaccinated. Isn't that nice? Thank you, Bill Gates. And get this. Talk about how statistics can be manipulated. According to the World Health Organization, you can look this up. They say in 2019, the Bolivian government created a universal healthcare system, just talked about that, which has been cited by the World Health Organization as the model for healthcare systems around the world. That was 2019. Just 2 years ago. Only problem is now in 2021, the system is completely bankrupt. And the national healthcare system anywhere outside the big city has gone medieval again. Isn't it funny how the WHO, you know, Dr. Falsey's domain, has somehow neglected to update their stats, still pointing out on their website the Bolivian government's universal healthcare system is a model for the world. Only thing is, the doctors, nurses, etc. haven't been paid for months, nor the medical equipment techs and maintenance guys. By the way, if you're going to live there, you're going to have to get a yellow fever vaccination. Oh, and just one more thing about evil Morales. Well, Bolivia elected a new president. He's from Morales' Socialist Party. And the first thing he did when he got into office, he pardoned Morales. So the courts had to drop all the charges, and now he's back in Bolivia again. Talk about socialism run rampant in the third world. And here's a shock. Did you know that all workers in Bolivia are subject to an income tax rate of 25% monthly, which is deducted from their wages? So everyone working on the books gets nailed for 25% taxes. On top of that, everyone pays 13% VAT on anything you buy. That means anyone working on the books in Bolivia is paying at least 38% taxes right off the bat, which is why it's claimed that half of the workers in Bolivia are off the books. In other words, they're working out of little tiendas or on the street, taking cash only. Anything to avoid that 25% income tax. But as for the cost of living, for products produced in Bolivia, it's very cheap. But everything that's imported, even when imported from another Latin country like Brazil, in most cases you'll pay double. Why? Import taxes, of course. But rent and food and everything that's produced in Bolivia itself, very cheap. So if you want to live like the average Bolivian who doesn't have a car, a dishwasher, a washing machine, air conditioning, a dryer, or even hot water, you could do it for $500 a month. Easy. By the way, my bad, I said air conditioning. You know, Bolivia's major cities are way up there, with some 6,000 to around 14,000 feet. That's taller than most of the highest mountains in the United States. So you won't need air conditioning. But in most cases, you'll need a heater or some kind of heating. Oh, and because some of the cities are so high up, there are certain people, especially gringos and expats, with health problems, and they just can't handle living in that thin air. Hey, and who over 50 in the U.S. doesn't have some kind of chronic health problem? Anyway, the air is really thin up there, and some people can't hack it. And they have to come down to sea level once in a while to regain their usual vigor. Though young people and young adults can hack it for sure. It doesn't seem to bother young people much, though it does tire you out faster. But with the over 50 crowd, it's different. Or for anybody who's got any kind of allergy or respiratory problem. So you can forget about it if you've got asthma. Believe me, you don't want to have an asthma attack at 14,000 feet. You know, some people who know Bolivia think it's great there are no McDonald's there. It's the only South American country, no McDonald's. There were 8 at one time, but they went bust. Why? Mostly because Bolivians make something like $150 a month. And relatively speaking, going to McDonald's was like going to a 5-star restaurant. I say good riddance. I haven't eaten fast food in years. But not so fast. They've got a chain of hamburger joints called Che's. You know, like Che Guevara? That murdering psychopath from the Castro regime? You know, when I see someone with a Che t-shirt or hat, I know they're either just stupid or have a very incomplete education. So bottom line, Bolivia wouldn't be my first choice, but then again, I like a little more hustle and bustle than most people, or at least quick access to all the comforts that first world people are used to. And Bolivia is lacking in that respect, including internet connectivity and speed. Like I said, Bolivia's lag time is way beyond the lag time of most Latin countries. Except for, of course, the even more socialist ones like Cuba and Venezuela. Now, as far as getting permanent residency in Bolivia, well, here's the thing. First, you have to get a 2-year resident visa, and you'll have to live in Bolivia and stay put for 2 complete years. And in that 2-year period, you can only leave for 90 days. One day more, you don't qualify. So plan on being there for 2 years with only 90 days permitted outside the country. That's what you have to do to qualify for permanent residency. By the way, Bolivia has a bunch of what they call special purpose visas. Specific kind of visas for foreigners depending if they want to live, work, do volunteer work, or do business on the books or retire in Bolivia. Oh, and by the way, when you apply for one of these visas, you have to write a letter of introduction in Spanish, of course, explaining your specific purpose for wanting to seek residency in Bolivia. You have to explain why you're choosing to move to Bolivia and how you plan to make your living or provide for yourself and family. And you'll have to supply 6 months of bank statements. The kicker is, it's one of those strange countries where they don't have a set amount of money you have to make each month, unlike Mexico, Panama, Guatemala, El Salvador, and the rest of them, who, depending on the country, have established a lower monthly income required to be able to apply for permanent residency. And that varies between $1,000 and $2,000 a month, depending on the country. However, Bolivia doesn't have a lower limit. That means it's always up in the air. It's always a question mark whether they're going to accept or reject you based on your income or savings. Oh, and I mentioned Bolivia has a lot of what they call special purpose visas. For example, they've got one that allows you 180 days in the country to work. There is a visa plan that allows you to stay in the country if you've got family ties there. They've got a visa just for visiting healthcare workers. There's one that allows for volunteer work in Bolivia. There's one for students, etc., etc. In other words, getting permanent residency in Bolivia is not an easy process, nor is it straightforward. Now, as far as the gringos and expats I know who are living in Bolivia right now, not one of them has jumped through all the hoops to get permanent residency yet, with about half of them saying eventually they're going to do it and the other half saying, forget about it, it's just too big a hassle. So anyway, Enver, thanks for your email. I finally got to talk about Bolivia. If you want a full breakdown and all the links on how to get one of those visas and move on to permanent residency, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you all the pertinent links. All right, moving on. Here's something you should know about, especially if your plan B involves living here in Latin America. As far as most professions, skilled or otherwise, if you need someone to do some work for you around the house and your Spanish sucks so you don't know exactly how to find a person to do that kind of work, let's say you need a plumber, and you will. A guy who does that kind of work in Spanish is called a plomero. It's just the word plumber with an ero, E-R-O, added to it. In fact, there are dozens and dozens of skilled and unskilled trades that are named exactly that way. For example, a truck is a camión, and a truck driver is a camionero, again with the E-R-O at the end of the word. And firemen, well, they use a pump, right? A pump is a bomba. Yeah, in Spanish, it signifies a bomb, too. But anyway, a bomba is a pump. Thus, firemen are called bomberos. Direct translation, pumper. And a guy who paints for a living, paint is pinta. And a painter is a pintero, again with the E-R-O at the end of the word. And talk about lost in translation. You heard me on a show a long time ago talk about drywallers here in Latin America. And I always say try to avoid it if you can, because drywall sucks up water and humidity like a sponge. And even 10 or 15 years ago, you would never see drywall here in Latin America, but now it's everywhere because it's cheap and dirty to do, you know. Now, you know the generic name for drywall from the American Gypsum Company is called sheetrock, correct? Sheetrock. Well, for some reason, when drywall first arrived in Latin America 10 or 15 years ago, it was all imported from one supplier, the American Gypsum Company. On every sheet had stenciled on it, sheetrock. So, like the universal word Kleenex for tissue, drywallers here in Latin America are called sheetrockeros. I'm not kidding. Sheetrockeros. There's that E-R-O thing on the end of the word again. Now, of course, there are some skilled and non-skilled professions that don't follow that E-R-O rule because some words don't combine well with that ending. Like, for example, an electrician. In Spanish, they're not called an electricero. That just doesn't roll off the tongue very easily. Instead, they're called electricistas. An I-S-T-A ending, there's lots of those. However, most of the skilled and unskilled professions end with the E-R-O. For example, a carpenter, a carpintero in Spanish, which, by the way, is also the Spanish name for woodpecker. Yep, they've got red-headed woodpeckers here. I had a family of them living next to my place for a long time. Did you ever wonder why woodpeckers don't get brain damage? Or maybe they do. I mean, look, if you repeatedly hit your head against a hard object, what do you expect? All you'd be fit for would be running for Congress. So then, why don't woodpeckers get brain damage? If you look at their skeleton, you'll see their beak isn't attached directly to the front of their skull. It's attached to the back of the skull with a very thin, curved, bony shock absorber that's on each side of his head. I guess you have to see a picture of it. Just take my word for the fact they've got two shock absorbers on either side of their beak. So, did I digress enough for you there? Meanwhile, there are mega caravans of poor, uneducated Latinos moving on up through Central America to Mexico, figuring rightly, I think, they've got a free pass from Biden because they'll all vote Democratic eventually. Funny thing is, I've seen them and they all have nicer smartphones than I have. So all you guys up there in Biden land, you got what you asked for. You happy now? But you know, it's a well-known fact here in Latin America that those groups are laced with criminals and gang members. So as far as expats, gringos, gonna-bes, and wannabes are concerned, that's a good thing. We don't want them down here. Obviously, here in Latin America, it's slim pickings for criminals. I mean, look, when the average Latin American makes $300 to $400 a month, what's there to really steal or extort from a guy like that, huh? Since everyone knows Americans are rich, it's the land of milk and honey. A bad guy would have to steal from a dozen locals to equal the kind of bonanza he could get from robbing just one clueless gringo in Jersey, Seattle, or Cleveland. Is that too un-PC for you? Well, you could see for yourself if you learn a little Spanish and come on down. And when you get invited to a couple of cookouts or birthday parties, and have a seat next to the guy with the most neck tattoos, he'll be glad to fill you in. In fact, over the years, I've talked to many guys like that. Guys who've been deported 2, 3, even 4 times. Guys like that will tell you all about caravans and coyotes. They'll tell you the real story, too. Not the fake, whiny, save-the-world news you get from the lamestream media. Just saying. All right, and then comes this email from Mr. R. He says, Johnny, I just listened to your show in which you talked about driving recommendations if you're coming down from the States through Mexico to the rest of Central America. Please send me those boots-on-the-ground driving stories that you have. Then he says, do you think it would be helpful, for example, if you were driving from the States to Guatemala, to get a set of Guatemalan plates to put on your car for the drive through Mexico? I suppose even if they are fake, they'd make you less of a mark than if you had Texas plates. Then perhaps you could remove those plates before you cross the border from Mexico into Guatemala and then replace them with the real plates for the vehicle. As for me, he says, I hope there is some warning before the so-called vaccine passports are put into effect. Thanks, Johnny. Signed, Mr. R. All right, thanks for that, Mr. R. But before we get into it, once again, for any of you brave souls interested in driving down from the States to any or all points in Mexico or Central America, I've got a page full of tips and some boots-on-the-ground stories of people who've done it successfully. Just shoot me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. By the way, I think most of you know you can't drive to South America. You can drive all the way through Mexico and Central America to the tip of Panama, but the Pan-American Highway stops there. You can't get through to Colombia, which is immediately south, by car, because of that huge swamp called the Darien Swamp, and no one's built a road through it yet. So if you do end up getting your car to Panama, you can get it to South America, but it'll be by boat from there. Anyway, to answer Mr. R's questions, number one, when you're driving through Mexico, if you don't have Mexican plates, the cops will single you out more than the next guy. So having Guatemalan, Honduran, whatever, Central American plates won't help. You'll still be a target because they know you're not a local. You're not connected, you don't have a network, and you don't know the ropes. Though it would be easy to get some real Guatemalan or Honduran plates, whatever. They'll match another car, not yours. And if you get stopped and caught for that, it won't match your car's paperwork, and then you'll be doing some jail time, I'm sure, in Mexico. Not a very pleasant prospect. And as far as when the so-called vaccine passports go into effect, man, I don't know. There's so much chaos out there and fake news with people collapsing, going to hospital, and even dying once they've been pricked. Talk about the cure being worse than the disease. By the way, that word prick is a universal term used for needles and politicians. But you knew that already. And then in reference to what we've been talking about in the last few shows, anonymity and getting the hell off of Google, Facebook, WhatsApp, etc., the following email comes from one of our famous Daves, Dave to the nth power. He says, good evening, Johnny. After listening and applying most of your great technical hacks, I was shocked to learn of your limited anonymity knowledge. Signal app has been around for many years. I personally have used it exclusively for the last 5 years. This app has the ability to not only text, but also make encrypted phone calls and videos from anywhere in the world. As long as you have an internet connection, it's similar to WhatsApp. I used it while I was in Panama in 2019, no problem. It does it all, like WhatsApp, but without big tech monitoring everything we say and do, etc. Then he says, one of the lesser known functions of the Signal app is its ability to strip all metadata from your photos and videos, rendering those untraceable as to location, date, and time, too. As for the Signal app, it's free. It's the odd case where you don't get what you pay for. You get all that privacy and anonymity for free. So then you might ask, if they're into anonymity, they don't sell or keep your data, how do they make money? How do they keep going? Well, turns out in 2018, Brian Acton, the billionaire WhatsApp co-founder, got so pissed off at Facebook's suck-a-turd who bought WhatsApp from him. He funneled $50 million of his own money into the Signal Foundation to finance the Signal app and keep it going. So there's a young billionaire super privacy advocate who invented WhatsApp. Then, after making his billions selling WhatsApp to suck-a-turd, he saw how they collected and sold everyone's data, so he decided on funding Signal. By the way, if you have any doubts about the Signal app, just remember, Edward Snowden himself endorses Signal. He says he uses it every single day. Remember, he's a wanted man, wanted by every first world alphabet agency there is. Hey, if it's good enough for Eddie Snowden, think about that for a minute. All right, then Dave to the nth power says, Johnny, here are three internet guys you might want to check out. They're all fantastic at internet privacy. First one's Brax, BRAX.ME. The next one's the hated one. And the last one, TechLore, TechLore. Then Dave to the nth says, Johnny, anything we can do to stick it to big tech and big pharma's ass is a step in the right direction, don't you think? Signed, your biggest fan, Dave to the nth power. Not to be confused with a guy who writes to me occasionally named Dave David. He'd be Dave squared, not Dave to the nth. All right, Dave, you know, I have to mention that once you or anyone lands in Latin America permanently and you really get serious about privacy and anonymity, that means when you sign up for utilities or buy SIM chips for cell phones, you're buying them in the name of a corporation or your cleaning lady or a false or abbreviated name. And as mentioned in a previous show, texts, messages, files, and data coming out of Latin America are of little or no interest to first world marketers or data collection agencies. Why? Because Latin Americans are just not worth much at all to first world marketers. So when you're living here in Latin America, you got that going for you right away. And as far as dumping Google, I must have 50 or even 100,000 emails I've gotten on Gmail over the years. There's just no way to get the majority of listeners to switch over to something like Proton Mail. Why? Because the 1,020-something shows I've got out there on the internet in podcast form all have me mentioning the Gmail address. So even if I tried to switch over to Proton Mail mañana, everyone who's listening to old shows or just starting to listen and decide to go into the show's archives, they'll send their messages to Gmail. But not to worry, I do actually have an encrypted Proton and StartMail account, which I use for sensitive and private stuff. So you can still absolutely hate Google and Gmail and still use them begrudgingly, just like people might hate their electric power supplier or gas and water utility company. They might complain, even hate them, but they still use them. That's not to say that there won't come a day when someone develops an easy way to transfer all your Gmail messages and files to an anonymous, privacy-based service like Proton or StartMail. But until that day comes, most people, including me, are stuck with Gmail, at least for the mundane stuff. It's just too bad that StartMail, Proton Mail, Telegraph, and Signal app weren't around 10 or 12 years ago. But thank Buddha, they exist today.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.